Western New York race fans, it's time to crank it up.
Start your engine!
For the next hour, the airwaves belong to you. Sit down, strap in, and let's head to WGR's Fast Track.
All right, take a nice big deep breath, buddy.
With your host.
Let's go out there and have a good day, all right, bud?
Dave Buchanan.
Good morning, race fans. 11:02 here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Welcome to another edition of WGR's Fast Track. I'm Dave Buchanan. Thanks for listening, as always. And, man, we got a lot to talk about this morning. We've got a crazy Daytona 500 to talk about here on this edition of Fast Track. And we're going to be doing that here throughout this opening segment. We've got open phone lines. In fact, this whole hour just for you at 803-0551, 888-552-550. Your thoughts on last Monday's Daytona 500 after it was postponed by rain. After the race got about 20 laps in on Sunday, rains came and they did not stop long enough for the track to get dry to resume the race on Sunday, and we had a Monday afternoon, early evening race that saw Denny Hamlin go to victory in the Great American Race for the third time in his career and second year in a row that Denny Hamlin hoisting the Hartley Earl Trophy in victory lane at Daytona. And on top of that, we had a scary crash involving Ryan Newman, which sent him to the hospital that he walked out of just 2 days later. An amazing story that has been this week that has kind of taken over the spotlight in the sport. But again, phones are open here at 803-0551, 888-552-550. You can also send us your tweets at FastTrack550 and Facebook.com/WGRFastTrack. Before we get into Daytona, this David Ayers thing with the Carolina Hurricanes and the Toronto Maple Leafs last night, with the Hurricanes having to get their emergency backup goaltender in net playing half the game and beating the Leafs. I was trying to think of a racing equivalent to it, and I don't know if it would be possible, but it'd be like, you know, Kyle Busch or Kevin Harvick getting sick on race weekend or getting injured during the weekend and not being able to start the race, and instead of, you know, bringing in some Xfinity or truck series driver to fill in, they go in the grandstands and find some late model driver or legends car driver to fill in, an older one too, not just some kid, but, you know, like a 42-year-old retired late model driver to fill in for them in a cup race. I'm sure there's some example of that in racing history, but that was just a crazy story last night in sports, just following along with that last night with David Ayers becoming a hockey legend, helping the Carolina Hurricanes beat the Toronto Maple Leafs last night as the emergency backup goaltender. Whenever a story like that comes up, I always try and run through my head what would a NASCAR or motorsports equivalent be. I think we did this exercise last year when Andrew Luck retired or something out of nowhere. pretty crazy stuff last night. 803-0551, 888-552-550. But let's start with Daytona. And Denny Hamlin proved me wrong last Monday, or this past Monday, I should say. I've been saying, I don't know, for the last few years that Joey Logano is the best restrictor plate, or excuse me, we can't say that anymore because they don't have restrictor plate, super speedway driver, tapered spacer driver in NASCAR. And you know, I thought I was pretty somewhat right on that, but I am wrong. Denny Hamlin has proved me wrong on that fact, because now I believe that he is the best super speedway driver in NASCAR. And I will, for one fact alone, one thing he said in an interview I heard with Denny after the race on Tuesday morning, he said, talking about the last lap, and the whole interview itself was kind of funny. The first half of the interview was kind of funny because Denny was trying to describe racing the last lap with Ryan Newman and Ryan Blaney, and he kept calling both guys Ryan. He just would refer to him as Ryan, so it was like Ryan this, Ryan that. And I think halfway through the interview he realized that what he was doing, and it was so confusing, and finally he started referring to them by their last name. But I digress. But what sewed it up for me with now anointing Denny as the best super speedway driver in the sport is the fact that on the last lap, going down the back straightaway, instead of blocking Newman and Blaney, as Blaney was pushing Newman past him down the back straightaway, Denny said he let them go by on purpose, knowing he could get back to them before they got back to the checkered flag. And that is just the smartest thing you could have done in that aspect. Instead of trying to block, and he said if he had blocked them, he probably would have wrecked all three of them. And instead, he let them go by, and he wound up winning the race for it because he was smart enough to know that with these cars now, that You didn't need to block him, and he was going to be able to get a run to go by him by the time they got back to start finish. And I just thought that was such an intelligent thing for him to say, and really shows how smart he is behind the wheel, especially in super speedway racing. And I was just completely impressed to hear that that went through his mind on that last lap, and because it has changed just with the new aero package for the plates. The blocking, while still the predominant strategy in super speedway racing, is not the right way to go anymore. The bubble of air around these cars has kind of gone away, and now the a pursuing car or a car coming up along the side can pass the leader because that bubble of air around them is not as predominant as it used to be. And it seems like the strategy is almost going back to the tandem racing strategy, where one car can push another car just on its own almost to the front of the field. You don't even need a line of cars. You just need one pusher and one guy to get pushed. And problem is with that is much as it makes for interesting racing, it's also, we saw how many wrecks it leads to with pushing, because when these cars don't line up just right or they push at the wrong moment on the racetrack, it leads to disaster. And we got that on the last lap of the Daytona 500 on Monday night, when Ryan Blaney pushed Ryan Newman, and Ryan Newman's car spun, bounced off the wall, got airborne, and got hit in air by Corey LaJoie's car, and then went sliding on its roof until it finally came to a stop with fuel rushing out of its fuel cell, which thankfully did not catch fire. And then Ryan Newman had to be extricated from his car and taken to a hospital, and thankfully walked out of that hospital, I don't know, 36 hours later or so. The whole thing is remarkable, but also the whole situation has left me with a lot of questions. And I think we're going to get some answers to those questions today, because Steve Newmark from Roush Fenway Racing is going to address the media this afternoon in Las Vegas. Unfortunately, I was hoping he was going to do it during this hour, because I would have run that live. But it's coming up at 12:45 this afternoon Eastern Time, 8:45 out in Vegas. So if you know where to find those things, you know, keep that on your radar. If you're interested to hear what he has to say, that's coming up at 12:45. Actually, I think you go to NASCAR.com/press pass. I think they stream all the press conferences from the media center on race weekend, so you might be able to watch it live there, let alone just, you know, follow the right people on Twitter, and you'll get a word-for-word, blow-by-blow, word-for-word, play-by-play of what's going on in that press conference. But that's coming up at 12:45. So I think we're going to get some of these questions I have this morning that I've had since, Tuesday, Wednesday. But, you know, people were touting it as miraculous that, you know, Ryan has walked out of the hospital virtually unscratched. To the casual viewer, that, to anyone that doesn't know the inside information on what exactly was wrong with Ryan Newman, he walked out of there, you know, he's not black and blue. He doesn't have a cast on anywhere. Didn't appear he was limping at all when he walked out of the hospital with no shoes on, funnily. Kind of funny aspect to that. And it just left me with so many questions. You know, I don't want to call it a miracle, because we don't know how bad he was hurt. And it was a miracle, though, that he could survive an incident like that, an accident like that, especially when he got hit in the roof of the car when he rebounded into Corey LaJoie's car. As I told Bulldog on this station, what was it, Tuesday afternoon, you know, when he got hit in the roof by LaJoie, I thought the worst. And so did a lot of other people. Obviously, anybody watching that. Heck, Jeff Gordon, Mike Joy made it sound like we were expecting the worst news out of that incident on Monday. But that impact alone usually can spell disaster for a driver, to get hit in the roof and in the driver's side window and everything. So we were all expecting the worst. And then we finally got word late Monday that it was, you know, serious but non-life-threatening injuries. And that was kind of the first sign that, you know, he was going to be okay. Without them saying too much more than that, there was still, you know, a lot of speculation or still just a lot of concern, because you still saw what happened in that crash. But really, if you looked at just the hard facts that they had presented us, that, you know, a serious condition can mean a lot of things. They didn't get too detailed into what was wrong with them, you know. And then the next day, you know, we had word that he was talking and speaking to doctors and family. And then early Wednesday, we had the photo with him and his daughters. And then by Wednesday evening, you know, he had walked out of the hospital. But the fact that there was so much drama surrounding this, you know, without a lot of information, I guess, made it seem worse than it really was. You know, the coverage about it, social media, you know, people's just imagination maybe running away with them. You know, it just the way it played out was similar to when other drivers have passed away. But the fact that he walked away from it is great news. But I need some more blanks filled in, you know, to really appreciate what went down on Monday with Ryan Newman there at Daytona. Obviously, you know, the safety equipment inside those race cars, it appears, did their job. And the safety crews, and you'll kind of get a little more detail into how that all went down in our next segment when we play some comments from Steve O'Donnell from NASCAR, kind of laying out what happened minute by minute almost in the response to the accident. But the safety crews and the trauma doctors and the EMTs and everybody that was part of the effort to get Ryan out of the car as quickly as possible, cutting the root, the cage of the car and everything to get him out. You know, the response was phenomenal. But I just would have, I think just a little bit more updates throughout the situation would have maybe made people feel a little bit better. Because again, we all thought we just watched him die on national television. And the fact that we didn't get as many updates as we did, and I understand, you know, HIPAA regulations are so much more strict now than they have in years past, but it just seems like if they had just given us just a tiny bit more. I mean, we get updates in other sports, upper body, lower body, you know, concussion protocol. We just let us know that he's alert and talking, maybe, in those, you know, moments between Monday night and Tuesday morning. Just give us a little bit more detail, I think, would have calm down the situation and made everybody feel a little bit better about Ryan's chances during those first few hours. I think went a long way to just making everybody feel a little bit better, because again, we all thought he died on TV. So again, a lot of questions, and I think we're going to get some answers on those questions. I'm a little bit more on what happened to Ryan in those moments. You know, was he knocked unconscious? What exactly was the issue outside of getting him out of the car safely upside down, which was, you know, a huge part of that as well, too. When a car is upside down, you can't just take your seatbelts off, because then you fall out of the seat and you could break your neck. And that has happened to some race car drivers in the past. So there was that aspect. You know, but once they got the car right side up, was it just the damage was too much for Ryan to safely get himself out of the car? That's why they cut the roof. Or was he unconscious? Was he in some kind of medical emergency that required, you know, for them to perform procedures on him right there in the car? You know, I would just like a little more information. But again, the best news was him walking out of the hospital 2 days later. Pretty amazing situation all around. 803-0551, 888-550-2550. So fortunately Newman is okay, but unfortunately a scary wreck. Also had to feel horrible for Ryan Blaney and Corey LaJoie in those hours after that. You know, Ryan, the one that was pushing him to the finish and is the one that caused him to spin, and then Corey LaJoie, you know, hitting him in the roof of the car like that. He obviously could do nothing. It happened so quickly, couldn't react. And then there was the picture of Corey coming out of the car and on his knees after he got out of his car, and he said he had the wind knocked out of him and was just kind of spent after the whole thing. And props to Corey LaJoie, who went on national television the next morning. He was on Good Morning America talking about it. I could not believe that. I know these guys did interviews, you know, after the race, but that was in the NASCAR media bubble, you know, where they're probably a little bit more protected than going outside, you know, away from the track and talking to non-NASCAR national media. And it's Good Morning America. You know, obviously not that hard-hitting of journalism, but still impressive that Corey was willing to get up so quickly the following morning and want to go on live national television and face questions from non-NASCAR media. I found it very, thought that was very brave of him. Had I been in that situation, I don't know if I could have got out of bed the next morning with no, possibly, you know, not knowing much more about Ryan's condition in those hours after the accident. I couldn't believe that he was on national TV the next morning talk about it, but that was huge of him. And thankfully for those guys too, had Ryan, either perished or suffered some serious injuries, the guilt and the weight they would have on their shoulders from that. Obviously, it's racing. It wasn't done on purpose or anything, but still, knowing that you were a part of it, I'm sure the weight on them would have been immense, and just having to, you know, continue driving and just continue living this last week with all that. Thankfully, they, I'm sure, have found some relief, and I'm sure they've talked. I think Ryan Blaney put on social media that he has spoken to Newman. I'm sure Corey as well. They've both probably spoken to Ryan since he's been released from the hospital. But those two young men, what they experienced in those few hours before they knew what his condition was, I'm sure was anguishing for them. Outside of the end of the race on Monday night, it was your typical super speedway race. You know, it was entertaining, side-by-side racing, guys, you know, kind of different strategies playing out. You'd see the intensity pick up a little bit towards the ends of the stages. You had the Gibbs cars kind of just hanging out at the back of the field for most of the first stage and almost all of the and some of the second stage as well too, before the pit cycled around, put them back in the front of the field, and that's when the Gibbs cars kind of got involved in the show there towards the end of the second stage. And then, you know, the final segment, getting them set up, and then with about, you know, 30 to go, you know, of course everybody turns it up a notch, and that's when we started seeing all those big wrecks. And we had, you know, 2-3, you know, major pileups there within those last 30 laps, and even trying to come to the first green flag in the overtime. And you had Clint Bowyer getting tangled up, taking him a little bit out of contention, sliding through the grass. You know, it was your typical super speedway race, but interesting stuff. I thought there was, I was excited for the finish because there was a little bit better. You know, it wasn't as random as super speedway racing is. There was still some interesting names at the front of the field there towards the end of the race. You had, you know, Newman and Blaney in there, and you had Chase Elliott and Clint Bowyer and Kevin Harvick. And there was just, you know, it wasn't one of those random ones like in 2018 when we had Austin Dillon and Bubba Wallace racing for the win with Eric Almirola. You know, we still had some big names racing for the win despite everything that had happened. And, you know, a lot of good stories we could have got out of it. And Denny, again, showed why he proved me wrong. And it's not Joey Logano, but he is the best restrictor plate racer, or super speedway racer in NASCAR, as he found a way. I mean, we had one of the calls we took here last week asking about the Toyota's chances. And I really discounted those chances because there's only five Toyotas in the field. And there Denny was. You know, the rest of his teammates had been knocked out or received damage at some point, you know, Kyle Busch blowing an engine while leading. He was the last Toyota running there at the end, and he found a way with his talent behind the wheel to get it to victory lane for a third Daytona 500 win, and puts him in elite company. You know, I think there's only three other drivers with three wins, and only about five or six drivers that have three or more wins, you know, to go along with, of course, Richard Petty, seven wins in the Daytona 500. And some of the other drivers that have won it on multiple times, guys like Bobby Allison and Jeff Gordon that have, you know, won the Daytona 500 on multiple occasions. This really puts him in a new group of drivers. I think, you know, Denny has now kind of cemented his place in the history of this sport, even without a championship. You know, he is a guaranteed Hall of Fame driver now with this third Daytona 500 win. Very impressive, and now all he needs now is really to go chase that championship. And I said it on the show here last week that Denny was going to be my pick to win the championship this year. I think he'll go back to the Final Four this year along Kyle Busch as the two Toyotas in the Final Four, and he will definitely, I think he'll be one hoisting the trophy in Phoenix, in November, and he'll add that championship to his resume now with those three Daytona 500 wins. 803-0551, 888-552-550. On the flip side of that, I mentioned Kyle Busch is Joe Gibbs Racing teammate. Kyle now adds to his legend, as Denny added to his legend with another Daytona 500 win, the legend of Kyle Busch, who is a two-time and defending series champion, now is moving into that echelon of drivers that is chasing an elusive Daytona 500 win. He joins the names like Earnhardt and Waltrip and Stewart that spent the latter part of their career chasing the Daytona 500 victory, and having to answer all those questions about will this be your year. Kyle is now in that stage of his career. As young as he is now 0 for 15 in the Daytona 500 and looked like he was going to have a shot there on Sunday. He was leading, and of all the things that happened, it wasn't being crashed out of the race, getting caught up in a wreck while blocking for the lead. The engine just blew up, which, is such a rarity in this sport these days. Mechanical failures like that do not happen on the level like they used to 20, 30 years ago. So for a blown engine to take Kyle out of the Daytona 500 just now adds to that legend of Kyle Busch in this race. And he is now going to be that guy that every February, that's going to be a storyline. Will this be the year for Kyle Busch? And there's a couple other guys in that group. We talked about it last week with Tim Packman on the show. Clint Boyer, Brad Keselowski, and Martin Truex, who is also, I think, 0 for 15 or 0 for 16 in the Daytona 500. All those guys are in that group. But now I think with Kyle's pedigree and everything else he's done in this sport, over 200 wins combined in the three national touring series of NASCAR, two-time NASCAR champion and everything, he is now the last thing to add to his career mantle is a Daytona 500 victory. So that legend grew just that much larger, I think, because of the fact that it was an engine failure and not just another super speedway crash. The fact that it was a blown engine, just that the legend grows. It's like Dale Earnhardt in 1990 had a shot to win it, and he cut a tire that allowed Derek Cope to win the race, kind of in the same vein as that. Just fluke things that happen to you along the way before you eventually possibly get to that goal of winning the race. This is that blown motor for Kyle. It's kind of that chapter of his story there last on Monday night while leading the race and took him out, and he finished 34th. Denny getting the win. Ryan Blaney finishing second. Chris Buescher, good run in his Roush Fenway debut, in third. David Ragan fourth. Kevin Harvick thought maybe he would play in there a little bit more at the end, but he finishes fifth. Clint Boyer sixth. Brendan Gaughan finishing in seventh. One of those guys just fortunate to be there at the end. Corey LaJoie wound up eighth after everything. Ryan Newman finished ninth officially after his crash. And Kyle Larson rounded out the top 10. Chase Elliott finishing in 17th. I thought maybe he would get up there at the end, but he got spun just after they took the white flag on Monday night. And you'll hear in the next segment, we hear from Steve O'Donnell from NASCAR, the chief racing development officer. There was some talk, why didn't NASCAR put out the caution when Elliott spun there and going into turn one, that, potentially would have, obviously, if they'd thrown the caution there, the Newman crash would have never happened. But, I think NASCAR made the right call there. By not putting out the caution for the Elliott spin, it looked like, just from what we saw it on TV, that it wasn't a serious crash. It seemed like everybody had driven away. There was no debris. The field could get back around to the start-finish line without injury, without anything bad happening to them because of that crash. And there was no driver involved in the Elliott incident that needed, attention immediately, that they needed to get safety crews on the track immediately. So I thought it was the right call. Letting him race back to the finish line, even if they put the caution out for Elliott and ended the race there, yes, it would have prevented the Newman accident, but to blame NASCAR for it, I think is silly, because it could have worked out any number of ways where you'd get a similar accident no matter what you tried to do. But I'm glad they let him race back to the finish line even with the Newman crash. I think that's the right call. Obviously, if there was a safety issue from that crash, then yeah, they could put it out. But if everybody had driven away from the incident and there was no immediate danger to the drivers on the track, then let them race it out. There's no worse way to end the race than under caution. I mean, obviously, that used to happen 15, 20 years ago before the rule changes were put in place that gave us, overtime racing and everything, but I still think that's the better way to finish the race. So I was with NASCAR on, letting him run back to the finish line, and unfortunately, Elliott not getting the win and, finishing mid-pack there in 17th. I thought he'd be the one there to pull it off at the end, but just was not as fast. The Chevy cars were a little bit of a disappointment. The Fords were still the dominant, you know, make of speed weeks down there on Monday. But that was the one I was kind of pulling for there in those last couple laps. All right, we're up against the break. 803-0551, 888-552-550. We come back. We're going to play some of the comments from this weekend in Las Vegas from Steve O'Donnell and some other folks from NASCAR talking more about the Ryan Newman crash. That's coming up next here on Fast Track.
Hi, this is Kyle Busch, driver of the number 18 M&M's Toyota. And you're listening to WGR Sports Radio 550.
Kyle Busch going for his third win of the week, by the way, today in Las Vegas. Yes, there is a race today. Kyle Busch was supposed to start on the pole for today's race because qualifying was rained out and the field was set by last year's owner's points, which would have put Kyle on the pole. However, he and two other Toyota cars are going to the rear of the field for penalties. They were monkeying around with the nose of the cars on their Toyota Camrys, and he is going to the rear of the field. So is Denny Hamlin, and so is Christopher Bell in the Levine Family Racing number 95. They're all going to the rear of the field for today's race. They lose 10 points. Also, Martin Truex receiving some penalties, but he'll keep his starting spot. So he'll line up on the front row alongside Kevin Harvick, who will move on to the front row with Kyle Busch falling to the rear of the field for today's Pennzoil 400 at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. That gets going at 3:30 this afternoon. Kyle Busch has already won in Las Vegas a late model race on Thursday night at the short track there at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, which is the short track that Kyle grew up at, racing Legends cars. He won the truck race on Friday night. No surprise there. Stuart Friesen finishing in the top 10, and now we'll try and win the Cup race. The Xfinity race yesterday got started, but they did not finish, and they're actually going to finish the Xfinity race after the Cup race today, and that is going to be about 7:30 tonight Eastern time. That'll be on FS2 if you want to watch that after the Cup race today, the Xfinity series conclusion to their race. But one funny thing coming out of Kyle's win in the truck race on Friday night, and Kyle is, I think, undefeated now in the last 2-3 years when he runs the truck series. He can run like five races a year in the series. Kevin Harvick put up on Twitter put up a challenge for any other full-time Cup driver. If they can get a truck ride and beat Kyle Busch head-to-head in a truck race, he'll give them $50,000. And then Marcus Lemonis, who is the CEO of Gander Outdoor, which sponsors the truck series, he's going to chip in an additional $50,000. So $100K up for grabs if a full-time Cup driver can beat Kyle Busch in a truck race this year. I think Kyle is doing... He's got four more scheduled, I think, and they're all three of those are coming up in the month of March. So we'll see if any full-time Cup drivers are scrambling to find a truck ride to try and challenge Kyle and his very impressive KBM team. All right, we're going to go back to earlier this weekend in Las Vegas. Actually, this was yesterday, I believe, in the media center. To get a little more insight in what happened to the response to Ryan Newman's crash on Monday. There's no updates on his injuries or his prognosis or anything. Obviously, we do know that Ryan is home resting. He will not race today. Ross Chastain has been hired by Roush Fenway Racing to fill in for Ryan today. We don't know when he's going to return, but this is more about the response to the crash from NASCAR's aspect. So this is going to be Steve O'Donnell, who's the Executive Vice President and Chief Racing Development Officer. You may also hear, depending on time, John Bobo, who is a Vice President of Racing Operations for NASCAR, and Dr. John Padalek, who is the Senior Director of Safety Engineering for NASCAR. So these are their comments from yesterday at Las Vegas.
First, I want to start off by saying, you know, how thankful we all are to see Ryan Newman walk out of the hospital in Daytona Beach. We continue to work with not only Ryan, but his family and his race team as he continues his recovery, and we'll certainly be with him every step of the way. You've heard us say this many times, that safety is our primary responsibility and priority, and that you're going to hear more of that today as well. So a couple guidelines for what we're going to share with you today. I know a lot of the folks in this room want to hear. I know a lot of the folks in this room will want to hear as many details as possible, but today we're only going to outline the procedures and processes we have in place that take place in training, what we can recap in terms of a timeline of what took place at the scene, and then the investigation process, what the details will be as we roll through this and give it back to you with more. There's several areas we're not going to touch on today as our review continues, and also that the HIPAA laws that are in effect as well. So we cannot and we will not talk about anything that details medical response that may disclose Ryan's personal and protected medical information. So to start off, I want to say thank you to a few folks, and that's the AMR safety team, the folks that work together with them at Advent Health, Halifax Hospital, the Daytona Beach Police Department, and certainly the folks at Daytona International Speedway all working together in this incident. So what we want to provide today is a brief overview of the last lap accident. I want to look at both the medical capabilities that were involved and also the safety systems that were involved. So Dr. John Padalak is going to lead this for us. He'll explain a little bit more about the process and then give a complete review once we have all our findings in place. So I want to give you a brief chronological report of what took place and the key actions that took place. So the tool truck arrived at the vehicle 19 seconds after it came to rest. The fireman that you saw with the extinguisher was in that vehicle. One of the three trauma doctors assigned to the safety team for the race arrived at the car at the 33-second mark, and a paramedic entered the vehicle at the 35-second mark. For the next 3.5 minutes, two doctors and paramedics attended to Ryan, and at the 4:05 mark, the decision was then made to roll the car over while continuing to help aid the driver. At the 6:56 mark, the car was upright. The extrication team then began cutting the car, and a doctor continued to provide treatment. The roof was removed at the 11:10 mark, and the extrication was completed at 15:40, and the driver was then moved to the ambulance for transport. During this entire time, doctors and paramedics were attending to Ryan, except at the moment of the car rollover. Working in unison and performing their respective jobs, the first responders performed their jobs as they were trained. The training systems, the safety systems, all worked as were designed, but again, never satisfied with what took place, and we'll learn as much as possible and implement those changes, if there are any, as soon as we can. So I want to hand it over to John Bobo, who will walk you through the training that goes into each event from both a logistics and medical standpoint, and then Dr. Padalak will speak as well.
Thanks, Dave. You know, I want to talk about two important parts of this, which is our first response training and our medical procedures and policies. You know, training is a full season unto itself at NASCAR. Before the green flag drops, there's so much that we do each and every week. We are rehearsing and training weekly to create that operational muscle memory for times of crisis. About 2 months out before each event, we work with our local track partners to conduct trainings that include online, classroom, and hands-on training. The courses cover anything from cleanup, restoration, extraction, and rollover. Every single person working at the track in the safety capacity has to go through that training. On the medical side, we have the NASCAR AMR safety team. It's a team of emergency paramedics, physicians, and neurologists who provide a level of service that's just phenomenal. To date, over the last 3 years, they've worked 115 cup races and have come to know our competitors well. Another key component to our safety is our local medical and emergency professionals and our relationship with them. We work with our track partners and fully embrace local and medical emergency care. We have learned through the years that these local professionals are a gateway into the highest levels of care and expertise. And that's why we take the time before each race to tour trauma centers to get to know folks at the local level as we can do that. So you put all this together, and what you've got is a collaboration of professionals working in concert through the years based on mutual respect and dedication to a singular mission. Now, John Padalak will talk about some of the safety enhancements through the investigation.
Thanks, John. Good morning. Regarding NASCAR crash investigation, that begins for us at the racetrack. Anytime there's an incident on the track, whether the vehicle is towed or driven back into the garage area, the NASCAR safety officials go to that car and begin the investigation. That typically starts with pictures being taken around the exterior of the vehicle, and then also moving to the interior, looking at the driver restraint system, removing the IDR, which is our incident data recorder, and the high-speed camera in the Cup Series. All of that information comes back and begins to populate an incident report, which is housed in our NASCAR crash database. That process was followed for the 6 and 32 cars at Daytona, as well as all the other cars involved in incidents that week. In the case of the 6 and 32 cars, those vehicles were then transported back to the NASCAR Research and Development Center in Concord, North Carolina, for further investigation. On Tuesday, that started with the laying out of the vehicles in a secure space where we have all of the components and associated elements that came from the cars and on the racetrack, as well as the driver's safety equipment. We began to document all of that, all of those parts and pieces, all of that equipment, really starting from the outside of the vehicles, slowly working our way in and assessing each of the individual safety systems and how they performed individually as well as together as a complete assembly, and then ultimately how the two cars interacted together during the crash. We have many sources of data that we're pulling from in the investigation. As I mentioned, those include the IDR, the high-speed camera. We're also looking at the ECU data, available telemetry data from the vehicles, and broadcast and non-broadcast video sources. We're currently working on synchronizing all of those data sets together in time. So with the video, that's looking at each video on a frame-by-frame basis, lining those up together in time to create a full picture of what happened as the crash unfolded. We're working together with Roush Fenway Racing as well as outside experts as we continue to investigate and look forward to being able to provide more information at some time soon.
Thank you, gentlemen. We're now turn over to media questions. If you have a question, please raise your hand and we'll get a mic to you. And we'll start right here with Jeff and then we'll go to Claire.
Jeff Gluck from The Athletic. I'm curious about the paramedic who went into the car. Is that a standard practice to have somebody go inside the car in a crash like that?
Yeah, we will get someone inside the car as quickly as we can. And I think it's important to also note the, you know, surroundings of that car with, you know, there were a lot of things going on, and would applaud the paramedic for doing their job and getting in right away. And that's always our first move, first person on the scene who then works with the doctors.
Claire.
Claire B. Lang, SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. There were obviously many conversations with the drivers yesterday, and they were talking about the safety of the cars, which they feel really good about, but always NASCAR looking forward. Some of the taller drivers, the Joey Logano's, the Austin Cindrics, moving forward, is that kind of an area that you're looking at?
Well, I think as we look at all those in the next-gen vehicle, we're certainly always looking for ways to make improvements, and we have a good opportunity to do that with the next-gen. And we'll look at our current car as well as this investigation unfolds and look at any opportunities for improvement.
Go to Lee and then Bob.
Lee Spencer, RacingVoice.com. Just wondering, John, as far as the reinforcement bar, there's been a lot of talk about the Newman bar this week, and just wondering, you know, the reinforcement of the window, because, you know, the drivers really fear getting hit after, you know, it's not so much going over, but it's the secondary, you know, things that can happen. How instrumental, you know, has the reinforcement of the cockpit over the last two decades been in ensuring that the drivers do eventually walk away?
So when we look at the cars and look back at what we've been able to do with the cars as an industry, we've been able to make improvements. The one you've referenced in 2013 with the additional roll bars in the roof and the windshield area. We were also able to do things with a laminate windshield in 2013 and improved window net mounting in 2013. And all of those things really contribute and work together as an assembly to improve the overall outcomes to what we saw in Daytona. And so I think each one contributes in its own way for both of those vehicles involved.
I think just to add to that, John and I were talking earlier about, you know, the fact that Ryan Newman was involved in this accident with his engineering background, has been someone who we have turned to in many times talking about safety enhancements. One of the reasons you won't hear as many details today is, you know, we still haven't had the chance to go through this with Ryan and his team, with the other drivers in the garage, but Ryan's feedback as we go through this will be key, and I think that'll be a key component, as it's always been throughout the process when he's been racing.
There is, again, Steve O'Donnell, John Bobo, and Dr. John Padalecki from yesterday in Las Vegas from NASCAR talking about the response to the injury. And a good point there at the end, talk about Ryan Newman and his involvement in safety in NASCAR as a driver. He's long been a proponent of improving the safety of these cars. You heard the reference there to the Newman bar, which is part of the roll cage that goes towards the top of the windshield area of the car. Ryan has a checkered past when it comes to crashing in restrictor plate races. Ryan has been involved on his own in several flips in NASCAR stock cars at restrictor super speedway tracks in the last decade, going back as far as 2009, 2013. He has also been an innocent bystander, having other cars flipping that have landed on his car, most notably the Carl Edwards wreck at Talladega when Carl got into the fence and landed on Newman's car. So Ryan has been at the forefront of the issue of safety at super speedway racing throughout his career. He's been a vocal proponent of making the car safer and does have an engineering background, which allows him to give a lot of valuable input, and he has given it throughout his career to NASCAR on how to make the car safer. So it'll be interesting, as Steve O'Donnell mentioned, once they talk to Ryan about what else can be done. You know, obviously we're getting the new car next year, the next gen car. Can they add anything that they haven't added already into this new car that is coming next year just from this incident? It'll be interesting to see how that plays out and what Ryan has to say when he makes his first public comments. Waiting to hear from Ryan. He has not spoken, obviously, to the media since the wreck, and maybe he'll do it next weekend in California, or if he's waiting for the right time to respond. And again, we will hear more from Roush Fenway Racing at 12:45 this afternoon Eastern, which could give us further update on what, if any, injuries Ryan Newman sustained in that wreck and exactly what the Roush Fenway organization is their plans are here in the short term with how long Ryan may be out of the car and who will continue to drive it going forward. As I said, Ross Chastain has been hired to drive it for today, at least at Las Vegas. When we come back, we'll wrap up this edition of Fast Track. We got time for your phone calls now at 803-0551, 888-552-550. When we wrap up Fast Track next here on WGR.
Hi, this is Denny Hamlin, driver of the number 11 FedEx Toyota, and you're listening to WGR Sports Radio 550.
There he is, your three-time Daytona 500 winner. Again, man, just the smartness, the intelligence to not block there on the back straight on the last lap and allowed them to go by and still manage to pull off the win. Impressive run for Denny. Third Daytona 500 win, and really missing Newman by, I don't know, inches. When Newman spun, he went right across the nose of the 11 car. Denny just swerved just enough to dodge him. And how about the fact that two of Denny Hamlin's Daytona 500 wins are the two closest in the race's history, too. Just impressive stats for the driver of the 11 car. And he'll be in action today at Las Vegas. Again, 3:30 this afternoon for today's race at Vegas. Qualifying rained out. Kyle Busch supposed to start on the pole. He'll fall to the rear of the field because of a violation with the on the nose of the car. So it'll be Kevin Harvick and Martin Truex on the front row for today's race and the Xfinity race coming up after the Cup race because that got postponed by rain. Speaking of rain in the desert Southwest, not only NASCAR having wet weather issues in Las Vegas, same story for NHRA in Phoenix this weekend. They had some rain issues on Friday and Saturday, but they did get their qualifying in for their second race of the season. Brittany Force, your number one qualifier in Top Fuel, Matt Hagan in Funny Car, and Jed Coughlin in Pro Stock, your number one qualifiers. But they also had some rain issues out there in the desert Southwest. But I think all the way around, I think things will be dry today for both events, and they should go on as scheduled. Bob Pacher said it was a 1% chance of rain in the Las Vegas area this afternoon. So 99% chance of racing for the NASCAR contingent, and probably equally similar forecast down in the Phoenix, Arizona area today. So you've got that as well. That'll be coming up today on FS1. Eliminations at 9 Eastern tonight if you want to catch up on the NHRA and the Metal Yellow Drag Racing Series. That'll do it for us. We'll be back next Sunday. NASCAR's season rolls on. Round 2 of the West Coast Road Trip next weekend at Fontana and the Auto Club Speedway before they head to Phoenix. So we'll talk about, you know, what happens here in Vegas today. Hopefully a little more Ryan Newman news. As I said, look for that press conference from Steve Newmark at 12:45 this afternoon, NASCAR.com/presspass, or just, you know, follow along on Twitter. And hey, who knows, maybe we'll hear from Ryan himself during the week as well, too. So we'll continue to monitor that. Feel free to tweet us at Fast Track 550, and we will talk to you next Sunday here on WGR.